indeed a special word of welcome. Will be extended to the DDG, Ms. Pata, from the Department of Higher Education and Training, and all officials of the department. Also, another special word of welcome will be extended to the chairperson of the board of NESPAS, Mr. Sogaise. Thank you very much, sir, for coming, and your team. And the chairperson of the Council of Higher Education Board, Professor Moisa. That's what is written here. That's what is written here. Yes. All right, I hope this mistake won't happen again. So I must remember, I'm also new, so I depend on what I'm given. So, so next time we will edit our work before it comes here. Thank you very much. It's Mr. Who? Professor Mosia. Sorry, Prof. I promise you, this is one improvement area. Next time when you come, this will not be repeated. Well, and your team and all other guests, indeed, we are very happy to meet with you this afternoon as this new committee, brand new committee. And if you look across, you'll see that we're all new, but don't worry. I have brought with well-capacitated team members. I've already done my homework, but indeed, otherwise I wouldn't be talking about it. It would be a high risk to talk about it, but they're very good, they're well-capacitated. You can ask the department that came here yesterday, so you can relax and wait for a real engagement with these honorable members. All right, we are on opening, but I know I have an issue that I want to raise with you. I know you will not object to it because one of our very important role players in the education sector, I mean, affected us badly. We lost two professors, and I'm sure you wouldn't mind if I ask you to rise so that we observe a moment of silence. In the respect. May the soul of Professor Russell Botman and Professor Francois de Villiers rest in peace. May we be seated. Well, honorable members, we had to converge here this afternoon with the two statutory bodies of the Department of Higher Education and Training, talking about NESPAS, and I don't know how you prefer to call it, but CHE, or want me to call it CHE. I don't know how it has been called in the past, but CHE. Okay. Well, these two entities to us are key stakeholders and are in the Department of Higher Education and Training, but also they're playing a very critical role in the post-school education and training sector. Well, NESPAS function is, as we have read and also we have been briefed, to disperse loans and bursaries to academically deserving but poor students to access and succeed in higher and technical vocational education and training. Secondly, the Council for Higher Education ensures that these students who go to institutions of higher learning are offered accredited, quality and relevant qualification. We are indeed delighted to have you here. Well, to the honorable members and your good selves, let's prepare ourselves for a robust and a constructive engagement after getting briefings from the two entities, the public entities, yes. Well, we are looking forward to getting a briefing on these two public entities' annual performance plans and budgets to fund those planned activities in the final year of the medium-term strategic framework. We are also hoping that this year, indeed, as these two entities will be aiming for 100% achievement in the targets you set for the medium-term expenditure framework. Actually, because we are at the beginning of the term, it will be a good thing that we start to write, and it's a very effective principle. So prepare yourself. I'm sure we will be able to do that. It's not something difficult for you, especially because you've been in this before. It will be difficult for us, but don't worry, we're so prepared to hit the ground running. So we're really looking forward to then the presentation, but also we want you to give us hope, Prof, that indeed we will achieve the 100% achievement in the targets that you yourself set. Well, the team that you see sitting here is new. I've already mentioned them earlier on, but be informed that they have committed to hard work and also to, you know, walk an extra mile where they are required to do so. Before I then proceed with the briefing, I think it would be appropriate that we take introductions, just as an icebreaker. I also want to hear your voices so that when you talk to me over the phone, you'll be able to connect face. What do you think? Very important. So we'll then start with the introduction, and then I'll start with myself, and then we move this way. All right? Okay. My Christian names are Yvonne Kwekwezi Phosa, but I am commonly known as Binky. So I wouldn't mind if you called me Binky. All right? I am the chairperson of this committee, but maybe a little bit about my background, but anyone who feels like elaborating on his background, this is the time. Otherwise, after this, there will be no time for it. So this is the moment. Right? I've been 15 years in the legislative sector. I was a deputy speaker for 5 years. I became speaker of the province for 5 years. I became an MEC for finance for 4 years. I then got reshuffled, which I decided not to call reshuffling prof, portfolio rotation. Through this, I then found myself in the Department of Economic Development, Environment and Tourism. So, of course, I've been a social worker. I come from a social work background for 18 years. I've been a social worker. So don't be deceived by this place, but it's fine. Alright, that's who I am. Well, academically, I know the highest one that I have for now is Masters in Public Administration and which I got through the University of Pretoria. All right, over to you, Sir.
Thank you very much, Sir President. My name is Amayedo. My surname is Soka Issa, and I'm the chairperson of the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, NSFAS. I can assure you, Jefferson, will forget that you gave us a cool name to call you. I once tried that at NSFAS. I told them to call me ZB, but they still call me Mr. Sokai.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks, Jefferson. My name is Msula Dakar. I'm the Executive Officer and CEO of the National Student Financial Aid Scheme.
The name is Luke Polo. I am the chief available for parishions of Nessus. Thank you.
Afternoon, honorable members. My name is Ratu Nahe. I'm the chief financial officer for Nessus.
Afternoon, members. The only roles amongst the board. My name is Tolisa Peter. I'm the chief information officer of Nessus.
Good afternoon, members. My name is Diane Parker. I'm the Acting Deputy Director General for University Education in the Department of Higher Education and Training.
Good afternoon. My name is Peg Mosso. I'm the Chief Director for Programs and Qualifications in the Vocational and Continuing Education Branch of the Department of Higher Education and Training.
I'm Lomo de Hafsmeni, the Fertilizing Officer in the Office of the Minister. I was a Member of Parliament for 20 years and I once served in this portfolio of education in the NSOP. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Andile Masubu. I am the Council Member of CHE, also EXCO Member of CHE. Background, I'm a former president of SACO, that's how I find myself in higher education and training.
Thank you so much.
Good day, members. My name is Tembo Sia. I'm the chairman of the Council of Higher Education. And the people that pay my salary is the University of Pretoria. I'm the vice president of the
Good afternoon, members. I'm Denise Webster, and I'm the Director of Monitoring and Evaluation at the Council on Higher Education.
Good day, members. My name is Tula Kanyo Mutusi. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for CHE.
Good afternoon. My name is Betty Taiva. I am Deputy Dean of Research and Postgraduate Studies at TWC. I'm a Council member and also a member of the Monitoring Committee. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We'll now move over to the honourable members, if we may start from my ex. Oh, no, there are other people over there with them. So could you please introduce yourself, starting from this end? Okay, so we...
Hi, members. I'm Tuzamine from the CBC. A journalist.
Can you hear me? Not quite. If you can just, you know, just raise your voice. We really want to hear you.
And the name is Tuzamine from the CBC.
Or Tuzamine from SABC. You see, we didn't hear you, Tuzamine. I mean, you can enter here, we speak on something with one another. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Thanks for showing interest in our work. Over to you, madam.
Good afternoon, members. My name is Pumula Sukhomela from the Office of the Director General, Department of Higher Education.
I think there's something wrong with your mic. We're still struggling.
My name is Pumula Sukhomela. I'm a parliamentary officer in the Office of the Director General, Department of Higher Education and Training.
My name is Foster Mohale. I'm the media liaison officer for this particular committee. I am a trained journalist.
Well, he is a trained journalist. All right, thank you very much. Honorable member.
Good day, members. My name is Ngadi Meng Frida. I'm a member of this committee from the ANC.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good day, honorable members and members of staff from my education and NFAS. I'm Chandra Kulisa. I'm a member of the committee. I'm the chief of the NFP. I'm a former deputy mayor I served in the provincial legislature of KwaZulu-Natal as a member and chair for the follow committee, and I was heading Foundations of Education at the University of Zululand before.
I want to remember, did you introduce yourself as professor? Because if not, I want to bring that character in here.
No, I said I'm glad.
So this is Professor Kubisa, who is also an honorary member of the chief. I'm sure that must be making you to feel good, but also bringing professors here. can imagine the value. That's what I was talking about. They are capacitated members. That's what I was talking about. Okay, thank you very much. Over to you, madam.
Thank you, Chair. Good day, everyone. My name is Bongile Mthunu, a member of the committee from the ANC. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Over to you, my lady.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon. My name is Julie Gilliard. I'm a member of the ANC and of this committee.
Okay. Thank you very much. Over to you, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is Yusuf Kassim. I was a member of this committee and a member of the, on behalf of the Democratic Alliance.
Good afternoon, Belinda Bazzoli from the DA.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, I'm Alfred Butane, an alternate member of this committee. I was a full member last time around.
We are happy to have you here, Mr. Butane. You are not here by mistake. Thank you very much. My whip.
My name is Denise Ghana, member of the committee of the society. I was just a bit of my background. Mayor of Soweto 1995, Mayor of Johannesburg when it mixed with Soweto from 96 up to 2000, and I came to Parliament. I was actually taught by Professor Bozulu. We find ourselves on two opposite sides now, which is not that nice. Thank you.
Government, you see. As long as we sit here and have a shared vision, that of ensuring that education being this key and important role player in changing the nation, taking it to greater heights so that it can compete with the other nations of the world. As long as we have that, I have no problem. Same understanding and, you know, shared vision so that we indeed assist in ensuring that we move from a developing country to a developed country. And this is key to that. Thank you very much. Over to you, sir.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Suela Elvis, representing the ANC and the member of this committee.
I take it that you are familiar with the members of staff who have joined us in this meeting, but if you so wish, I can ask them to introduce themselves to you, because maybe there are some new members of the boards here. All right. Shall you introduce yourself, starting at the back there? Thank you very much.
Lindumzi is my name, called as a name. I'm here as a representative for the committee. Thank you.
At which university? For chair. And I'm sure you've heard this expression, dynamite come in small packages. This is what I've experienced so far. You know? So thank you very much to keep up the good work. Can't be complacent. Thank you, madam.
My name is Wampa Mugima. I'm the content advisor for the committee. My name is Wampa Mugima. I'm the advisor for the committee. I'm also a former lecturer and former researcher.
Which university?
University of Limpopo.
Thank you very much. Just to give you a taste of what I'm bringing, so I'm sure you can relate now and be happy that we are now this formidable team, I'm including yourself, and together we will be able to move the Department of Higher Education to new heights. Remember the work that was done in the past 20 years, and we want to acknowledge and recognize that work, but indeed our challenge is to now take it to new heights. Thank you very much. All right, now that we've introduced ourselves to one another, and we now know we're sitting here, I'm going to further ask you to relax and please feel free. And when the time comes to engage, let us engage with one another. We can be robust as long as it is constructive and towards and to help us to achieve our mandate and the mandate of the department. Thank you very much. I'll now talk about apologies. We have received apologies from the Honorable Minister, who was here yesterday, but due to other pressing commitments, is not able to come. Same applies to the Deputy Minister and the DG. Otherwise, they have promised indeed to work with us closely, and they have committed to supporting our work and working as a collective and cooperatively with all of us. Thank you very much. Also, let me tender an apology for Mr. Mbata, who is from EFF, so another very strong, a person who's got a strong education background, served for 14 years in a board of the FET, FET board in KZN. And I've got Chishonga, who comes from Kang, also very strong. Was a magistrate, am I right? Yeah, he was a magistrate, but he's got a very strong academic background. But thank you so much. Now you know who you will be working with. I will now want us to move on to the next item, which is briefing by NSFAS to this committee on your APT, and then also the budget, how it's linked to your APT. And also, we wouldn't mind to hear about your challenges, so that as this committee, we can also, maybe we can come up with advice, because we come from different backgrounds, and we put all these heads together so that we can benefit from everybody's wisdom sitting here. But thank you very much. Shall we then request, Ashur, it's going to be yourself, Chair, briefing the committee on your ATP. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. It can't be better than this. The warm welcome that you've given us indeed was shivering. Though I've been seeing this committee, but seeing a new committee of the Fifth Parliament, I felt that it's going to be a change. But you have made us to feel very much warm welcome. Chairperson, as you have already indicated, as the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, we have come here to brief the committee on budget and annual performance plan as per your invitation for 2014-2015. Let me say upfront that the drawing or the sign that you see at the top of this presentation is not the logo of NSFAS. The logo of NSFAS is the one on the right hand side down. We came with that when we hit 1 million students funded by NSFAS in 2012. And if you expand on that diagram, you will actually see over years since the inception of NSFAS in 1991, how the numbers have increased up until the 1 million students in 2012 that we came across. We are going to cover in this presentation, and Chairperson just will make a quick introduction just for the members to understand our mandate and background, and we'll talk about our vision, mission, values, and the partners that we have. We felt that we must also bring you in to understand our strategic focus and our new transformation model, which we call student center model. And secondly, we are going to talk about the annual performance plan and the budget 2014-2015, as you have invited us to do so. I am going just to take you through to the mandate of NESFAS. In fact, let me talk about NESFAS. NESFAS, as you indicated, Chairperson, is a public entity, and we are reporting it to the Department of Higher Education and Training, and we are governed by the NESFAS Act 56 of 1999. We have used this act to make sure that we carry on with our mandate carefully so that we can also understand when the mandate is changing, and we collect that mandate from this parliament. As I indicated earlier on, since inception in 1991, NESFAS has dispersed more than 41.5 billion in our products that we sell at NESFAS, which is loans and bursaries. And up to date, we have funded up to 1.4 million students as NESFAS. Chairperson, in 2013, we dispersed 8.7 billion to 416,000 students at the 23 public universities and 50 public technical and vocational education and training colleges throughout the country. This number in 2012 was at 7.7 billion and the students were at 383,000. And you can see going forward over the years, the number is increasing. Our mandate, Sir President, we have not come up with anything new putting in this slide. We have clear functions outlined in the NESFAS Act 56 of 1999. Ours is to develop criteria and conditions for the granting of loans and bursaries to eligible students in consultation with the Minister of Higher Education and Training. We also have a mandate to raise funds because these funds can never be enough with all the needy students out there. We are also responsible to allocate funds for loans and bursaries to eligible students. One of our tasks is to recover these loans. We also maintain and analyze database and undertake research for the better utilization of financial resources. Chairperson, we advise the Minister on matters relating to student financial aid. We are also open to perform other functions that are not necessarily outlined in the Act, but if the Minister would like us to do the other functions, we are also open as the board to take through NESFAS. This mandate is the one that is assigned in the Act of NESFAS. At this point in time, Chairperson, because one of the things that we have done as the board of NESFAS is to make sure that we employ personnel to deliver according to our mandate. Now I'm going to ask the Executive Officer of NESFAS to take us through the vision, mission, and values as are outlined and to the rest of the presentation. That is why I've come up with the full complement of the executive of NSFAS, is because if you look at NSFAS executive, we have no vacancies and we've filled them, and these are the warm bodies that we have come up with. I'm going to hand over to the executive office to discuss.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, honorable members. As the chair of the board of alluded, I will take you through the rest of the presentation. I'll ask the CFO to come in to the numbers. Being a public entity that is based in Cape Town, we have got the advantage that we can bring all our executives at no cost here to Parliament. The vision of NSFAS is to be a modern public entity that provides financial aid to all eligible public university and TVET college students from poor and working class backgrounds. And our mission is made up of three distinct elements which describe why NSFAS exists, what we do, and the impact on our constituency. And NSFAS exists to provide financial aid to eligible students from public TVET colleges and public universities. NSFAS identifies eligible students, provides loans and bursaries, and collects student loan payments to replenish the funds available for future generations of students. And NSFAS supports access to and success in higher education and training for students from poor and working class backgrounds. And we've also put in the presentation our values. I'm not going to go through the values. The slide that we have, Chair, and this slide is just to give the committee a background before we go to the actual APP. Shows the key partner that NSFAS work with. NSFAS is an entity of the Department of Higher Education and Training. It the key partner in terms of funding and coaching as some of that department. We also work with other entities within that department. The National Skills Fund is one of the biggest contributors to funding for student financial aid. Starting in 2013, the Social Education and Training Authorities, the CITAS, also come on board as one of the contributors to funding students. Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, Basic Education Department, the Department of Social Development, the Eastern Cape Provincial Government, and of late we have signed an agreement with the KwaZulu-Natal Provincial Government to disperse bursaries on behalf of those provincial governments. We also work with some NGOs that identify students, especially the NGOs that work in the rural areas, and they are able to support those students that might not have a facilitated in higher education. We work with the now 26 universities and the 50 TVET colleges as the students that we find are studying in those institutions. The strategic focus of NSFAS, in 2012, through the department, the minister, and after parliament, a transformation program of NSFAS was approved, which introduced a new student-centered model for financial aid. And this model for financial aid was necessitated by some of the problems that were identified in and around 2010 when the minister ordered the review of NSFAS, and the ministerial review committee on NSFAS made some recommendations on how NSFAS should change going forward. In the past, NSFAS had no relationship with students until only when they left the system and became debtors, and NSFAS came knocking on their door wanting repayment of loans. In 2013, therefore, the model was introduced to introduce new systems to receive applications directly from students, manage loans and bursaries, distribute funds to institutions and students, and recover loans. This model is currently in the first year of piloting in 2014, and we are now busy with assessing the first year of the pilot. It has made NSFAS to be positioned to manage more bursaries on behalf of other public sector institutions, as I mentioned, some of the partners that we are already working with, and we focus on increasing collections and raising more funds. Despite the threefold increase in funds for financial aid during the last 5 years of the previous administration, the previous parliament, anecdotally we can still see that we only assist about half of the students that are eligible for debt loans and bursaries. I think the numbers from the beginning of the last parliament is around 2009, NSFAS was disbursing about 3.1 billion rand, and the last and the end of the last parliament, the numbers have moved to 8.7 billion. The new student-centered model will will have key pillars. One of the pillars is funding will be provided to students for a qualification, not just 1 year of study at a time, which the students will apply once in the first year of their studies. And if they continue to perform academically, they will be funded throughout their studies. Those that will fall out of the system are those that are not making the academic criteria. The financial interest will now be automated and linked to other government databases to verify personal, family, income and employment data. One of the biggest challenges with the current system that NSFAS has been running has been the accusations are abound in the system that some students provide information that is not accurate. And therefore NSFAS has gone to sign up agreements with Home Affairs to verify some of the information that gets provided as part of the loans and bursary application process. Tuition and resident fees will continue to be paid directly to the universities or to the colleges, as we don't want to put that amount of money in the back pocket of students. Allowance for books, food, private accommodation, transport, electronic and assistive devices for disabled students will be paid directly to students, ensuring that spending can be monitored and properly accounted for. Chairperson, I will now go into the annual performance plan of NSFAS, and starting with the three strategic goals that have been set in the strategic plan, and also filtered through the annual performance plan. Goal number one is to have an efficient and effective public aid in student financial aid and administration. Goal two is to access, access, and progression to contribute to improving both throughput and pass rates. And goal three is improve financial student financial aid environment. I should hasten to repeat what the chairperson has said, that this is the last day of the cycle of the strategy, and you will see that some of the strategic goals that were set in the previous strategy have now been achieved. The two programs at NSFAS, program one, which is administration, and program two, which is student-centered financial aid. Program one, the administration program, is able to conduct the overall management of the entity and to provide efficient and effective support services to internal departments. And the budget set aside for this is 102 million rands. Program two is student-centered financial aid to achieve the vision and mission of NSFAS by creating a centralized student financial aid system and to provide funding to eligible students while maximizing recovery and sizing to increase the pool of funds available. And the operational budget for that is 48.9 million. We'll talk about the loans and bursaries at the investment budget later on in the slide. The strategic objective 1.1 is to improve the governance at NSFAS and ensure that NSFAS continues to comply with legislation. And the strategic objective 1.1 up to 1.4, 64.2 million rand is set aside for achievement of those strategic objectives. And 1.2 to ensure that each functional unit has a congruent policy and procedures manual so that individual roles and delegations are firmly instilled. Strategic objective 1.3 is to improve the governance system to improve the smooth transition from the old to the new policy framework. And strategic objective 1.4 is to integrate the new policy to the performance management framework so that executive management and employees are accountable for delivering on the policy. The next set of three strategic objectives, 1.5 up to 1.7, 1.6 has been achieved in the previous period, and therefore this year we'll be focusing on 1.5 and 1.7. It's to ensure that staff have the appropriate skills and competency base to fulfill the entity's vision and mission, and to develop a skilled and trained workforce to provide sustainable delivery. And you will see that these objectives were to ensure that there is internal efficiency at NSFAS, and this is historic because at the time that the strategic plan was drafted, NSFAS had just received a disclaimer of what is opinion, and therefore we're moving from a certain base to move the entity forward. Strategic objective 1.8 and 1.9 have been achieved in the previous period, and therefore they are not being targeted this year. Strategic objective 1.10 is to develop and implement processes and procedures for the new operating model to ensure NSFAS fulfills this mandate to students and stakeholders. And 26.7 million rand has been set aside for the achievement of that objective. The program two, which is the student and financial aid, is to improve marketing, communication and support for students and prospective students, 2.2 is to develop the student value proposition betterment to serve the student needs more effectively. And 2.3 is to create a standard application process through regional offices and other appropriate channels for delivery. And this is what the three programs where we the displacement of funds to students have, and 8.4 billion rand is set aside for that for the achievement of those strategic objectives. Strategic objective 2.4 is to raise new funding for undergraduate study for targeted student programs, including what we loosely refer to as the missing middle, which is the students that might not come from families that have got enough collateral to secure loans at the bank, but also they don't meet the means test criteria set by NSFAS to qualify for a NSFAS loan at the bank. 2.5 is to maximize the recovery of outstanding loans from all eligible debtors employed in both the formal and informal sectors of the economy, and we're set to find 4.5 million rand to achieve recoveries of 467 million rand. 2.6 is to develop a new program for unfunded courses of study, and 2.7 is to develop a new product for specific targeted student segments, and we've set aside money to conduct research on how those new unfunded programs can be supported. Chairperson, I will hand over to the CFO, Mr. Loratonga, to take the committee through the budget side of the plan.
Thank you, Suva. Thank you, Chairperson. Members, when we move to page 10, slide number 20, that's where we talk about loans and budgets. And as outlined in slide 6, in page 3, the partners that we have. Our budget for financial year 2015, we have a dealer general of 2.9 billion, final year program of 1.1 billion, the teacher program of 112 million, student with disabilities 66 million, the SAICA partnership to TUCA for CAs is 37 million, the TRC commission fund is 3.9 million, the FET colleges bursaries is 2.1 billion, the NSF that the CEO referred to is 755 million. And we have Funda Lushaka at almost a billion, at 946 million. And other funders are CETAS, the MBA, and the partnership that we have with the Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, and other funders, to the tune of 715 million. That gives us close to 8.9 billion. That is the budget for this fiscal that we're in, compared to the 8.7 billion that has already been dispersed. And that is the loans and bursaries budget that is going to enable us to make sure that we meet our mandate of disbursing funds to the needy students. And when we move further to the administration budget, that was referred to in slide 13, page 6, in order for the corporation to be able to carry out its mandate, we need to be paying our staff and purchasing goods. So the operational budget, you have compensation of employees at 79 million. You have goods and services at 66 million. You have communication to make sure that we reach our stakeholders, being the students, at 4 million. You have consulting, constructors, and special services related to the transformation program and other programs that we are currently carrying out in the corporation at 13 million. And then you have outside services and maintenance at 22 million. You have staff education, training, and development at 3.3. And this area is what the EO has alluded to, that these are some of the strategic objectives that we're going to be focusing more on. You have post-stage stationary computer services at 12 million. You have official function at 3 million. You have business development at 7 million. You have payment for capital assets. This is your property, plant, and equipment at 7 million. That gives us a budget overview of 151 million for the financial year of 2014-15. Thank you.
Chairperson, that is our presentation, the brief that we can give the portfolio committee today. And thank you very much. We'll welcome any comments and questions.
Well, thank you, Chair. I would like to check if the DDG would like to comment or any additions from the DDG.
I think not at this particular point. Let's hear what the members have to say, and if there is something that we can assist with, we will comment at that point. Is that okay?
Well, thank you, Chair, for the insightful presentation. I will now open for a discussion that will start with clarity scheme questions, but you know, may as well discuss back on discussions. Sir, over to you, Honourable Member. Honourable Member Kasim.
Thank you so much, Chair. I've got a number of questions, and some of them are very broad, just to try and get a better understanding of where we are at and where we need to be in order to reach the necessary vision. So I just want to look at necessary vision basically as contained in the annual performance plan, which talks about providing financial aid to all eligible public university and TVET college students of poor and working class families. So my first question then speaks to the shortfall that has been experienced in order to meet that vision, which speaks about all of those that are eligible, and it was indicated in the presentation that only half of those that are eligible could be or can be enlisted as this country. So just looking at the budget very quickly, there's been a very small increase from the 2013-2014 year to the 2014-2015 year under the loans and bursaries budget from 8.69 billion to 8.8 billion. I want you to know, where does that leave us in terms of that indicator? And what does each of these line items need to look like in order to meet the vision? Because when we're talking about those that are eligible, it's obviously the vision changes when looking at your Funza Lusaka or bursary, whether it be your Tukuka students. So it's not a very straightforward answer. The picture will change. How much does each of these line items need to change by in order to be able to fully meet that vision, whether it's the general education, whether it's the Tutuka funding, the Funa Lusaka funding, and then also as a side to that question, the social development bursary funding, who is handling that at the moment, or is there any role that's played by NASFAS as is currently? So what I would like to know as an answer, Chairperson, to this first question is obviously, why is it that so little has been budgeted, and when we look at the medium-term expenditure estimates, it doesn't increase by much. By 2016, it increases to 9.2 billion rand, for example, according to the performance plan. And how much does each one of those items need to change by, and how much does the entire budget then need to be elemented with in order to meet that vision? The other questions, Honorable Chair, through yourself, is in terms of the financial means testing. And it speaks to one of the performance indicators on how do we, it was in the presentation, if I was just refer back to 2.4, on the raising of due funding to undergraduate study for targeted student program, including the missing middle. Now, that obviously refers to those students that are above the band, where their expected family contributions are very high, where actually they can't afford to study. What are the, my question is, what is the form of funding that NASFAS is looking at in order to assist students? Or would it not be better to increase the ban in order to reduce the burden of financial means testing, so that those whose parents perhaps earn more according to the current financial means testing could still be included to change that formula of how we calculate the expected family contribution, so that an increased number of students who currently are living in the no man's land or the missing blue, as is contained in this report, can be funded and are not being prejudiced just because they're sitting that in that band. So what is the possibility and what is the time frame that we're looking at? Then looking at the student satisfaction measure, which is contained in the annual performance plan. I don't have the actual section, but it is one of the measures that is contained. It is very vague as to what type of measures will be used when looking at student satisfaction. Understanding that this is very relevant with the new pilot project, this year has been many problems with pilot projects. So just to give some sort of a brief summary of how those problems, what those problems are, and how those problems will be addressed. And I can note one or two of them. I can note, for example, I know that at my alma mater, it's one of the institutions that are part of the pilot project, the Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University. There are issues with regards to the number of students that are eligible at that institution that are not funded in comparison to previous years because the system has now been centralized. That's the first issue. The second issue is Now that it's centralized in exam, students that need assistance, students that want to appeal, for example, I mean, I'm talking in, from my own experience, that was part of the appeals process there in years gone by, are not able to do so properly. A lot of the communication has been done by electronic communication where there are no sponsors that are received, and there's no formal appeal process that students can directly appeal, and their criteria is there, because not that we picked up on, where there's criteria where students that there are specific circumstances for that student that means that they need to be funded, where they need, a decision needs to be applied on a case-by-case basis, where a student is now not going to be funded in that regard. And then there's the new system, and I know that NSFAS has been marketing themselves quite a lot on how students have been the e-box system, how they're going to access money to purchase their living expenses or their groceries, whatever the case may be. Now, one of the problems with that system is that you must get airtime in order to access your funds. Now, NSFAS isn't providing any airtime. Now, if a student is poor and can't afford any airtime, how are they going to access their funds? So is that an issue that's been noted by NSFAS? Is there a way that we're going to look at addressing that or redressing that, or must the institutions then step in themselves in order to assist the students with that? Then looking at the living allowances, which is carrying on with my questions, there is a problem currently where students who live on campus or live in residences are catered for in a particular fashion, as opposed to those students who cannot find a place in residence that get, correct me if I'm wrong, in the region 700 to 800 rands odd a month as a living allowance, which means because the student is not placed by the institution in a residence, or because they may not be under criteria living in a specific proximity to the institution, they then now still maybe being out of town, but not in, within a particular proximity, have to live off 800 odd rand per month as a living allowance. A lot of them have to pay rent, or they sleep in labs, laboratories, or in cultures outside of universities. We've had publicized cases of that happening. Is there a plan to increase that living allowance, or how that needs to be done? Is it part of the new student-centered pilot project that is being undertaken by NSFAS to make sure that those students are not prejudiced as well, just because they may be from inside the specific proximity and not from outside proximity of the institution, and just because they do not have a place in residence that's been covered by a residence allowance. Obviously, understanding according to the old system before this project, where institutions are still disbursing money, they have the discretion to know how to manage the funds to the students, or whether to broaden the net, and whether or not that will change with the new system, and whether there's a specific standard that's going to be set per student with the new system in itself. And then going back to my final question, obviously my first question is the one I'm most interested in and all very important. My final question is with regards to student debt or indebtedness. We know it's been a perennial problem. Now, there are students that are returning students. They have a debt for a number of reasons, and I can list hundreds of reasons as to why that debt might have occurred, even though they may have been funded for a portion of the year or a portion of the studies in previous years by NSFAS. But they cannot now access NSFAS because of that debt, or they cannot register with the institutions. What type of funding has there been a study that's been done on how to assist the students? I know that institutions themselves are having to contend with that issue at the moment. Where we find a student has a debt to the institution, because of that they're not being registered by the institution, and they may qualify and may even be granted NSFAS or be told that they will be put on the list for NSFAS, but because they haven't registered, they won't be able to access their funding. And that's because they have this debt when they don't have funding in order to cover the debt in itself. It's very clear that NSFAS itself is not covering all of that debt as is currently. And then, sorry, there's one final question that I had in terms of honors coursework funding. Now, there's another missing middle that I haven't seen in some of the reports from NSFAS that is dealt with inconsistently across the country. And that is when you're looking at your postgraduate studies. Most of these institutions, when they're funding bursaries that are funding those studies or those courses, require a certain amount of credit to be for ESTA services. And a lot of these postgraduate courses, the first year or second year or even the entire course, and I can give examples of that, don't have research as part of those courses. So a student that wants to access funding for those courses can't be able to access it to Nassus because those institutions don't consider it as undergraduate studies. But they can't access a bursary either because, or a postgraduate bursary because there's no research. It's mostly coursework. There's no research content in those years. So basically what happens to the students, if they cannot afford to fund themselves, it's only your more privileged students that can access the sources and not your working class or poorer students that can access the sources. What work is being done in order to make funding available for that or to make sure that institutions or there's a study analysis or has there been a study analysis that's being done in order to ensure that we can address that specific group of students? And I can tell you what are the outcomes in some universities. I'll take your honors in BCom accounting, for example, is a very good example of a course where there's no research to it, but the postgraduate course is not being funded. The input, student input, where across the board in other courses are increasing the numbers of admissions, in that course it's decreasing. And you find that your underprivileged, poorer students from working class backgrounds are able to access in difference depending on the institution. Because Nassus will fund it, you know, the way that it's being administered in some ways. In other ways, it's not being funded. But this is just one course that may have been picked up. It's a variety of courses where coursework in postgraduate studies, coursework is a part of the third year or the second year, and then research is only undertaken later on, and it's not part of 120 credits. But yeah, so those are my questions, Honorable Chairperson. I will try and note, you know, the answers, and if you'll allow me a follow-up if I'm not satisfied with some of those answers. Thank you.
That's how it works, Mr. Kassim, that you always are given an opportunity to make a follow-up, if there are follow-up questions. And thank you very much for your questions. Ms. Killian, I reserved your hand. Who else would like to speak? Professor Kubisa and Ms. Nkulu and Ms. Nkagime, of course, Professor Ozuli. Oh, yes, I see my whip. You, yes. If you will come after Professor Ozuli. Thank you very much. In that order.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I would like to ask the following question. As far as the presentation is concerned, I will then also ask a few general questions. First of all, part of NASFAS's mandate is to recover loans. Now, when are those loans recovered? Because the approach has now changed to a course and not an annual sort of payment or a loan. It's for a course. Is it at the end? And what is your percentage recovery rate? What is baseline at present? I see that there is a provision made for recovery of loans. Is it good? Is it bad? What is the percentage? Can we just have a sort of a general indication? Secondly, on your presentation slide 8, student-centered model, if the loan is provided for a qualification of funding, what is the current provision? Do you penalize students when they fail, or do they have an opportunity to carry through if it's possible with reconfiguration of the courses? How do you, especially since the funding is not adequate to cover all needy students and the, you know, who would actually qualify for such funding? Then you have indicated that you have a financial means test. Have you now been able to create a system where you are also linked? It is said here that you are linked to other government databases. Does that include Home Affairs and SARS, so that you are aware when students are perhaps not as needy as some others, as in order to assist them? Then, just as a matter of interest, your strategic goals, are they aligned with the government's priorities in terms of careers and courses that we really need in the country to develop our human resource in towards specific goals? Do you also allocate your loans and your bursaries with that in mind, and do you have a percentage split, or How do you deal with that in order to redirect people towards science? Then, and please, we have nothing against humanities. We just know our country, some more people doing science and mathematics. Just a question with regards to the no-fees schools. Is your target, your annual target, not extremely low? Should the communication not be broader focused? And is there not another mechanism to reach students in that? Because that is primarily, obviously, the target market for loans and bursaries. Then a question with regards to your sources of funding. You have indicated that you now have two new sources of funding. Do you have any sources of funding from the private sector, or is it a significant so that you can also start managing that, because that should pick up. If we have a very good agency that could manage that, it could pick up in time to come. Then, Jefferson, specifically vis-a-vis your budget priorities vis-a-vis last year, just what struck me was that there was an increase, a double up more or less, on postage, stationery and computer services. Is there any particular reason for it? Are you developing new systems and computers, etc.? And then why was business development shrunk to just about 10% of what it was last year? Is there any reason for that? It was last year the sort of excessive allocation. And then, if you will allow me, I just wanted to ask general questions about, obviously, budget time is time for administration to see when you have posts, etc., posts approved. Do you have an approved organogram? And do you have all those posts, the post establishment approved, or do you have additional posts? How did it come that there was an advertisement of some senior posts in June? 8th of June, I think, some 6 senior posts were advertised. Could you perhaps just explain how that came about? Then there's an indication that there was a budget shortfall. What is the current position? Do you foresee that you will run into another budget shortfall this year? And how do you manage the previous financial problems that you have had? And then lastly, it is not always based on fact, but when allegations start running about possible corruption and collusion between staff and some students, it's not good for the institution, because it affects the integrity and the credibility of the agency. Have you had any investigations? Is there any substantiation for it? And what are you doing to create the right control environment so that does not occur going forward? How do we stop any possible allegations of corruption and collusion that some students are getting away and not repaying their loans, etc., or maybe are recipients of such loans and bursaries and they should not have qualified? So how do you curtail that? Thank you. Thank you, Jack.
Thank you for your questions, Ms. Killian. The next speaker will be Professor Kubisa.
Thanks, Chair. Just a few questions. I think the most pertinent part of it is the ability to access funding. And of course, that comes with knowing that there is funding, exposure to it. I'm saying this because a learner out there in the rural areas who has no access to technology, and perhaps educators don't have information, may not know that there is funding. He or she might have some bits and bits of information. I wanted to know how you do your publicity for funding, because there, to me, that is paramount. And of course, with the criteria that are set for learners to access funding. And the second one will have to do with perhaps the profile of the students who access funding. In this regard, I will perhaps be paraphrasing some of the issues that were touched by the Honourable Cassim, that profile of students, who are they, the geographical strand of those students, where do they come from, the qualifications that they are doing, and a lot of other information related to that. Per university, per institution, who are they? Because some students complain that they don't get funding yet, they qualify. Perhaps if this could be profiled, that from this area we find so many students in this university, they are doing these degrees, etc., etc. I think that information is rather very pertinent, so that we get the overview of how students are funded. And of course, the third issue, which is rather a very broad one and a general one, you know, there have been not good stories about NSFAS as if monies are squandered. And I don't know whether you're trying by all means to improve that record, because it doesn't augur or bode well for us out there, you know, when we get such reports. This will, of course, hinge on the previous audit report, where there is any improvement, because any government will look for value for money. We give out money, but it's the end value that money was squandered, lavishing for other reasons. I think that's very essential. And then finally, I saw an item here on another slide, which is through the Reconciliation Commission Fund. Just clarity, because I have another picture through the Reconciliation. Just clarity on that one. Comrade Jefferson, or Honorable Jefferson, thank you so much.
Did I hear the word comrade? As long as please let it not be repeated. Remember, we are honourable members.
No, it's not just. It's a slipper of the tongue.
I'm trying to deal with that slipping of the tongue. What is it? Yeah, tongue slipping. Yeah. All right. No, that's fine. All right. Who else left will be honourable member Mgulu.
Thank you, honourable chair. Mine is on the new student-centered model. For me, I think it's a very good. It was a very good idea in terms of management of applications and resources. But one witnessed a spread of strikes during the beginning of this year. And my question is: now that everything is being centralized, do you have enough capacity to deal with all applications from our tertiary institutions? That was my concern. The second question is just for interest. Since with this new model, you apply once for a qualification, which may extend over 4 years, is there a way of monitoring student progress or the results? Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for the questions, Honourable Member. Honourable Member Ngadime.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me first start by welcoming the presentation made by NSFAS and further acknowledge and appreciate that they are really helping our learners out there, because they are now having access to the universities and colleges. My question is, I have heard on the presentation that when I'm looking at the mission of NSFAS, it is said they identify eligible students and provide loans and bursaries. And then I'm just having a worry when they go further, saying there are some debt collectors. But I think it is good also because they need to retain again the monies that, or to retain the funds for the future generation. But I just want to check whether maybe they do have a plan for this poor of the poorest learners that will go and complete their academic qualifications and stay for many years without job. And then when they talk about this debt collectors, is where I'm having a serious worry. Where are they going to get this money to refund? Whereas also nurses need the money to go on to help other nurses.
Done. Yes. I will now move on to Honourable Member Professor Bozoli.
I've got a few questions, but I'll try and be quick, given that we've had so many. Do any students get full bursaries? I understand not, but I'd like to know whether they do. If not, what is the overall proportion? What is the average proportion? Let's put it that way. What is the average proportion of a bursary that a student gets? Because the image of Ms. Faz is that it's generous up to a point, and it doesn't manage to quite cover everything, and therefore the students often drop out, and that's the problem. Secondly, does your long-term plan match the department's enrollment planning? I understood from yesterday's presentation by the DOADT that they're envisaging not only more students in universities, but in 1 year, 150,000 more students in the TVETs. 150,000 more. Now, if you have an organization that promises it's going to help all poor students, at the same time you have a department that adds 150,000 more, probably mainly poor students, to its list, is the government not clear, and I'm not blaming NIFLAS for this, because I think you've given the budget that you've given. But it seems to me that what the government is doing is actually creating a riot factory. A riot factory in these universities and colleges. A place where the letdown on behalf of the students is so large that you will get riots again in January and February, as we got this year. And if something different is done. I noticed in one of your comments that you say that as part of the new scheme, you pay the fees and residence accommodation to universities, fair enough, but the rest of the money you pay directly to the student so that it can be monitored and accounted for. And I'd like to know how that is done. If it's paid into a private bank account, surely the student can then use it for anything. And we all know that the pressure on the students is not to use it for the purposes for which it is given, but the pressure on them is to share it with their families. Now, looking at the budget, the top line in your bursaries and scholarships budget is called general allocation. What I assume that is the allocation from the department. That's all the department seems to be giving you, is the $3 billion general allocation, which, by the way, has gone down this year. All the rest of the money appears to be, and correct me if I'm wrong, it appears to be ring-fence funding from little bits and pieces from other departments and other units, like the Truth Commission, Department of Basic Education, etc. So presumably those all only go to a certain type of student, which means that the general allocation of $3 billion is all that exists for the general student public. All the rest are ring-fenced. And I just wanted your comment on that. I have had experience in the National Research Foundation of being dependent on ring-fenced funding, and ring-fenced funding only helps to a certain extent. It can actually be a handicap on the funding of a body. Then I'd like to know what are these official functions that are held every year and that cost R3 million a year. Does a bursary fund need just R3 million worth of official functions? Surely that is not part of your job. And then my last question is, I'm not sure which government departments you think are going to give you the information as to whether students are telling the truth about their financial situation. But certainly Home Affairs would not be one of them. Home Affairs will tell you about their citizenship, but not whether or not their parents have a job. So, and getting information from SARS, is that what you're planning for the job side of things? Thank you.
Thank you for your contribution, Professor. Over to you, Mr. Ketana.
Yes, the first one is,
I know your jurisdiction is just to administer bailaries, but I'm also interested to know if you spent $41 billion, that's a lot of money, from 1994 up to the present. That is a lot of money injected into our community for a good purpose, of course. Do we ultimately have an idea where, I know the ones that take loans need to pay back and those you chase back, but generally speaking, do we generally have an idea? I don't know, maybe there's a reconvocation, but do you have an idea what happened to all the students ultimately? I mean, it's good, the intention is to fund so that ultimately people can make a livelihood and contribute there for themselves, families, and the society after they finish, but that's not the guarantee. I wish there was a way to check ultimately what is $41 billion. After 20 years, all the students, if you can say, yes, they are successful, they are living, they've got jobs and so on. And I would also appreciate that if they don't have jobs, some of them, a very high percentage, we should try and find ways and means to back up. I don't think it's enough that we give bursaries, we finish a clean audit, that's enough for us. We're dealing with human beings, and their success is very important. Failure of success is very important. The failure in a big number, we need to make interventions. I know that is definitely not within your jurisdiction. I just want to hear how you feel about it. The second one, on the $41 billion also, let me just deal with the totals. $41 billion, how much has gone to tertiary universities and how much has gone to technical and vocational? We spoke at length about this important thing of trying and stimulate people not just to want to be university graduates who ultimately get unemployed, and that we should channel them into technical and vocational colleges. How much is the shift? Can you see the shift from the way you give bursaries? And the last thing, I also want to see if we are able to check how much is private sector, not those that give us money directly, but private sector that sponsor, that give bursaries, maybe to employees who run their own bursaries. In a country, I thought if you could calculate, when you go to that level and talk education, which would go there, if does that show this is what your patriotic private sector is doing in this country vis-a-vis government. So are we able to do a comparison of what government is doing and what the private sector is contributing? In the past, we had more cadets stream through Anglo-American, but I mean, just generally, are we able to measure those two? For now, yes, the last one actually that I don't want to leave out is the rural-like professor, the first professor, not you picking the first one. The professor is about rural area. I mean, we have seen, you know, nature is nature. You get in a village that nobody ever visits, I don't know where they ever get their visitors there. You get just someone who's a straight A there from nowhere. You don't think teachers are not know the school is probably in a mad house, but you get just a straight A. Are we able through our system to pick that who is being brought up by granny? And granny doesn't even know what straight A means. When the result comes, she doesn't know she got a star in the mad house. Are we able to pick up that and channel him and make sure that is a gift that we're not using our general society? Thanks.
Thank you for your contribution, Mr. Kekame. From my side, I would like to find out, Chair, on how will the student-centered model identify students who dropped out of the system but benefited from NSFAS funds. The second question will be, when is the system going to be rolled out to all institutions of higher education and TVET colleges? Then my third question will be, when will the miss
in middle be studied in terms of your plans? Because NESPA previously reported that a BTEC funding is going to be phased out. I would like to find out from you if you've got a transitional plan, and also whether all the universities who offer BTEC are aware of the phasing out of the funding. The other question would be, how have students received the news of phasing out of the BTEC funding? Just checking if proper consultation was done so that there is a buy-in and also support. Otherwise, we might experience problems. Again, on the 8th of June, NESPA advertised 6 senior manager positions. Are these on the organogram? And whether you have an adopted organogram, because it's important. And does the entity have other vacant positions except the advertised 6? And if your response would be yes, what is the vacancy rate? Again, NESPA was investigating the possibility of buying laptops for NESPA's beneficiaries. We'd like to get a progress report in this regard. Where are we in terms of this? And do we have money for it? Because any decision must be accompanied by also financial resources for that decision to be successfully implemented. Right. On the appointment of the CFO without the accounting authority support, what plans are in place to prevent this from reoccurring? Because to me, it is a compliance issue. Does NESPAS have a risk management strategy and the implementation plan, but also the manager? Because you can have an implementation, but if you don't have a risk manager, you'll still encounter problems there. On a late disbursement of NESPAS allocations to students, and sometimes in the second semester, what improvement plan do we have in place? Because I want to believe that the first quota, if we have not dispersed, then the students will struggle, will suffer. Indeed, wherever we identify gaps, we expect the chair and his board to close those gaps. I will now hand over to you, Chair, to respond. To you and your team to respond to the question. Thank you very much. And the honorable members must then listen carefully so that we don't make follow-up questions where those follow-up questions are not necessary. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's a very long list of questions to draw on this. We'll do that. Most of the questions are going to be answered by the management next to me. Because of so many questions, I was tempted, maybe I must review, that even the chair, Council for Higher Education, is a board member of NESPAS. But he has not come for that. Okay, sorry. Chairperson, let me just talk about the missing middle. Because I think the questions on the missing middle have come up from Honorable Kasim, and then I think even the other Honorable members have come up with that question. I must say that the Board of NESPAS, together with the Minister of Higher Education, agree to this gap that we found between our means test which is up to 122,000 above, and those students whose families cannot even qualify to borrow money from the banks. So that's the gap we're talking about. And those students are right at the queue of NSFAS many times. And there is no funding to that particular case. And therefore, the board of NSFAS is busy developing a plan around that. So any question, we are not at the implementation of that, and would also like this portfolio committee, when we report back to the minister, we'll also report back to this portfolio committee. Together, we see how we fund funding of that particular gap. Because this is a gap in our society that we can find, even in the allocation of government subsidy houses. That is, there is this gap between those qualified for subsidized houses and those who get the bonded houses. Then there is that particular gap. So that is the gap we find in education. So the board of NSFAS is busy developing that plan and will submit to the minister in due course. I think I felt that I must say this upfront so that we, when we talk about its funding, we know that it's something that it is fit parliament. We are also going to engage timely again this portfolio committee around that. Okay. The other question, I'm not going to take the question straight, I'm just tackling some of the questions. The executive office is going to follow the two in answering these questions. The other question that I felt that I must dealt with up front, I think Professor Kubisa spoke about the issue of profiling students who access the funding of NSFAS, and also how do we get to the deep rural of our country. And that question also came from the Chief Whip. I must say that one of the reasons why we came up with the new student model is exactly for that. This transformation model of NSFAS, when we summarize it, we say money follows student. And therefore, we are even saying that in terms of our partners, let us not only look at the universities and colleges. Let's go down to schools themselves so that we don't leave any school in South Africa in terms of this particular funding. So, the kind of mapping that you're looking for is taken care of in the transformation model. And when the results come out, and remember that the transformation model is still in the pilot phase, we're piloting to 7 universities and 5 technical and vocational education training colleges. That is where we are. We're still piloting. And I must say that in terms of this pilot that we are doing, it will be possible that we pilot again if we don't get the proper results that we're looking for. So I'm just touching on that question, and I think in terms of our transformation model, we will be able to cover it. Yes, I think I indicated that Honorable Kekana also come up with this rural, and it is for that reason that we came up with this transformation model. Chairperson, from your side, you also spoke about this missing middle. I hope I've tackled that particular part in how we respond to it. But the one thing that I'm going to take is the latter part in your questions. The other questions are going to be taken care of. We came up with this, having discussed with the minister, and we agreed as NSFAS that indeed
one student, one laptop can assist. But when we were working out the details of this in the funding, again, issue of funding came out. So it's something that we are still busy with, and we are tying up with our transformation in the manner in which we shall be implementing the budget. When we have worked it out and report back to the minister, this portfolio committee will also know how we go forward with this one student, one laptop in terms of the NSOS funding. And then I'm going to hand over to the executive officer who will follow the details of all the questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll sort of guide you in terms of time. I'll try to see all the questions that are similar in one answer. I'll start with some of the questions around the transformation program. I think there's a series of questions around the transformation program. The transformation program is on year one being piloted in few universities. There is four universities, 36 including the two new universities in Mpumalanga and Northern Cape, and five equity colleges. And part of the reason for piloting was to learn some of the lessons in an actual environment and be able to understand what would be the impact on students, on the universities, and on networks in terms of resourcing technology. But now behind the transformation program is new systems that have been acquired by NetSwaz to be able to accept applications from students online throughout the whole country. That's behind that. But also because of the nature of the country, we in the transformation program we retained the ability to accept paper applications from students. But post the application is also the ability to link up with government departments. And there was a question about which government department to think are going to give us information in terms of income. There's a few things that we bring together in terms of our because we put the SLA with SAPA. But SAPA, what SAPA gives us is about the history of the students, where the students come to. They come through the social grant system, and then we are able to tell a story by just knowing that student has come through the social grant system. We've got a ticket with SAPA that gives us the name and address of the employer. They don't give us financial information. They're not allowed to do that in terms of income tax. But they give us the name and address of the employer. And by just getting that information, you know that this person is employed. And therefore you can then make inquiries. If someone says, comes in after David and say, no, I'm not employed, but you say, no, SAPS has given us the name and address of the employer, because we know that they're employed. And what also happens is, when parents earn a certain amount of income, they usually get assassinated by students, because they know that once they bring their income, they will not meet the criteria. Then they assassinate them through an affidavit. That says, no, my parents have passed away, I'm affected by a grandmother. Almost says, therefore, it's not the ability to say, no, these parents are actually alive. These parents are not dead. Therefore, there's a whole set of things that we're putting together that will be able to give us the intelligence to be able to assess the applications as they come through the system. In terms of allowances that go to students and how we're going to monitor it, in the first phase, we have implemented what we have referred to as SPAC. This is a voucher-based system that sends an allowance. It almost it sends pockets of allowances to students. It sends a book allowance, to send a food allowance if students qualify for food allowance and accommodation allowance, and maybe an assistive device allowance. And this allowance is linked to certain measures. For instance, food allowance would be redeemable at ShopRite, Spa, and Pick and Pay. And the book allowance would be redeemable at Fansky and Take a Note and another bookshop. And by then, because that voucher transacted Fansky, behind Fansky is able now to give us the details to ensure the students came in to do this and this and this. Of course, that requires a lot of political analysis. We're not planning to analyze every transaction, but want to do some type of transaction and see what trade students are buying with these allowances. That's what we say pay them directly. It's not cash, it's paid through the voucher system. And then there's issues about access of the voucher system, whether the voucher system are unaffordable for students that come from the poorest families. One of them is the issue of it requiring students to have better. For students to transact, they don't need that time. And one of the things that we've picked up is now, for students to almost check their balances and things like that, they need that time. As a family that we're dealing with, as part of the assessment of the pilot, these are the things that we think would want like in the pilot, because we don't want the system to disadvantage the poorest of the students. And as part of the assessment that is taking place in the pilot of the transformation model. And that's, I was just dealing with the flow of the transmission model, the set of questions that relate specifically to the transmission model. But then the next question is, what is the plan in terms of rolling out? As an institution, I think we have to sit down and then say, okay, we've seen the first year, we've assessed first year, we've had some challenges in the first year we expected for a pilot. But then, what is the extent of the challenge to determine how we move forward from 2015? We might decide in 2015, let's ask you, we might decide that, no, we need to first make sure that the platform is stable and we resolve all those issues. But that decision has not yet been taken by the accounting authority of NESFA. That deals with the questions around the transformation program. There's a direct question about social development facilities. Social development facilities are managed by NESFA, but the selection, the application and the selection process is run by the Fund of Social Development. The NESFA runs the disbursement, the back office, where we manage the payment of money to the students. And there was also a question about student debt or what we refer to as historic debt. A few years ago, there was money that was provided to fund what we refer to as historic debt. And it has been funded for a year or two. Part of the global challenge in the whole system of financial aid is there is not enough money. You know, and these are the subsets. The other subsets of the bigger challenge. The challenge is we're seeing applications are more than the number of the amount that is available in the system. And therefore, there's a few subsets. One of it is students may have historic debt for a whole lot of reasons that they have debt. Some of them, the minister might have said, you can afford to pay 10,000. And then they don't pay the 10,000. And going forward to the next year, they owe the 10,000. Because they have not paid the 10,000 and they historic debt. But there was an intervention through the Department of the National Skills Fund to intervene and pay off some of the historic debt. But you know, the reality is there has to be trade-offs in the system. If you take money to go and pay historic debt, it means you have got less for this year. And those are some of the trade-offs that exist in the system that we have. And that takes me to the question I'm short for. The much publicized shortfall for the beginning of the year is, again, the subset of a big issue. The big issue is we love to have more money. And that links probably to the funding for postgrad study. And maybe to do this postgrad study. I think Ireland, next one is a first degree funding institution. If you just look at the numbers, last year we paid out for students 8.7 billion. There was only 50 million rand available for postgrad. And for postgrad, it's something that is just a small pimple in the bigger scheme of things that NESFA done. And it's and that funding has been dedicated for honors and MTech in the former UTs. BTEC is not necessarily being phased out, but as a generally BTEC is not SS qualification. Therefore, BTEC is not being funded by NESFA. There are, however, certain BTEC programs that get funded through their skills program. Because if it's a BTEC that is under the skills program, that BTEC therefore gets funded via the skills route. Otherwise, BTEC as a qualification on its own does not get funded because it is a second qualification and that is there to fund students to achieve their first qualification. And therefore, there's a whole lot of these students that exist in the system as a result of various interventions. I'll ask the CFO to deal with the issue of student debt and cover of student debt. But the Chairperson has already dealt with the issues about former students of NESFA. Honorable Prof. Kubisa has asked the question. And one of the things we can ask people that were funded by NESFA in this room, will get a shock of alarm, well, maybe more than half of this room stand up. But that demonstrates, you know, the impact that the institution has had over the number of years. I think we must as an institution go and do formal research in terms of where those people are. You know, we've done a profiling in the last 2 years of our annual report. If you have a copy of our annual report, you'll find that some of the people that were funded by the scheme and what they do, and they've actually been profiled in the annual report. There has been that campaign over the last 2 years to try and bring back and tell the public about how important the institution has
and it is to the country what it has done already in terms of funding some of the people that now drive both the private and public space. On the question of funding, there was also a question of private sector funding. How much private sector funding comes into this? We have not done an analysis of the private sector funding. But from NEFA's perspective, there is only one private fund that we manage money for. It is NetBank. We manage the external presence for NetBank. And that's a good platform that we are hoping to launch an engagement with the private sector foundation to be able to contribute to the system and fund more students. We still think that the low-hanging fruit is money that is coordination of public sector money in terms of bursaries that are being offered by various state institutions, by various government departments. That's the low-hanging fruit so that we can prevent any possibility of double-dipping in the system. There is a uniform database, at least for the public sector, where students are being funded, what they are doing, and so that we can link it also to the still needs of the country. And that takes me to where does NEFAS, which qualifications does NEFAS fund, and whether we fund sciences or humanities. And that's, I'm probably now delving into a political question, and I'm not one. One of the things is the big space, which is in the NEFAS general allocation, is for all students, whatever courses that they are doing. And part of the philosophy is, students that come from poor backgrounds should also be able to choose the qualifications they pursue. If they feel that they should pursue social science, they should be able to pursue social sciences. Else someone comes from a rich family will make the choice whether I pursue social sciences or other. But having said that, there is money that is set aside for skills. If you look at the NSF, basically, also the money that comes from the National Skills Fund is set aside to encourage students to take up a qualification in the skills category as part of the skills development needs of the country. Therefore, there is a balance in the fund between funding students to study generally where they choose to, but also trying to take care of the needs of the country in terms of driving certain programs more rigorously than others. There was a question also, I think this question was from the chair about the process of the appointment of the CFO. I think I must clarify. There was an administrative gap in the process during that process, but the final appointment of the CFO was approved and ratified by the Board of Nessus, which is the accounting authority of Nessus. That appointment is like the stamp of approval of the Board of Nessus, and I'm the director of the chairperson. And there was a question about jobs advertised, vacancy rates, and approval of the structure. As part of the change process, we had to go back to the board and present the new org structure. And that organizational structure was approved by the board sometime in August last year. And that's now the org structure that we are beginning to move forward and see. Part of the requirement of the transformation is it means that NEFAS has to employ more people than it used to have. Because we are now actively involved in terms of the administration and management of facilities. But you know, having said that, if you look again at the numbers, I think from an administration perspective, NEFAS has spent about 151 million rand to disperse about 8.8 billion rand. I think the percentage is about 1.5, 1.6. And we've looked at numbers, we've looked at all the entities in state that disperse money. There's no one that works at 1.6%. The lowest is 5% in terms of the administration budget, the percentage of the disbursement amount. And then, I think we've been bothering the department on this issue for quite some time that we need to expand the administration capacity of NEFAS. But there's a couple of things we have to do. One of it, we have to recover the loans that have been granted. And that takes me to the criteria for recovery and whether we beat up people that are unemployed because we want to get money. The scheme in its design is when students are still studying, they are not due to, they don't repay anything from first year until they finish. And even interest, we don't have them interest for the whole period that they are studying and give them an additional 1 year of grace interest free. And that 1 year is meant to give them that opportunity to go and find a job.
and therefore interest starts accruing on loans 1 year after they exit the system. And interest is charged currently at 4.4%. I've been looking around to get an interest rate of 4.4%. I can't find it anywhere else. That's basically how the scheme is structured. But also remember, on the course of study, if students pass all the courses, 40% of their loan is written off in their life. That means you basically, if you pass all your courses in the first year, you only due to repay 60% of the loan. That's why the scheme has to be supported from the fiscal, because it's not designed to sustain itself. By design, the scheme needs to be supported from outside funding, because it's meant to encourage students to work with the system and go and work. Also, in the final year program that we have, that the CFO spoke about in the budget, the students pass all their courses when they are doing final year. They qualify for 100% conversion of that loan to a better. That means for their final year, there is nothing they have to pay if they pass all their courses and leave the system and graduate. And in terms of collection, we only collect from people that are employed and earning above 30,000 per annum, and we are looking to revise that number. It has not been revised for quite some time. Therefore, the scheme does not pick up anyone who is unemployed and unable to afford the repayment. Only people that can afford the repayments are required by the scheme to pay back, so that we can roll back this money and contribute to the future generation of students. And I should hasten to say that all the payments that we're targeting as part of our plan, they get reinjected into loans and budgets for the current year. It's part of our fundraising initiatives that we go into cover from people like me who are funded by the scheme, and make sure that we can plant more and sustain the scheme. I would ask the CFO to ensure that all the questions are covered. I would ask the CFO to deal with some of the finance questions.
Thanks, Msula. I will deal with the questions that were raised by Honorable Killian around the budget. I will start with the business development one, the sharp drop. For the fiscal year of 2013-14, the $73 million is related mainly to the implementation of the student-centered model, and the $7 million that you see there for the next coming fiscal is the money that is left for the support contract to ensure that after we've implemented the system, we've bedded it down, can be able to make sure that it's sustainable. And you also went on further to ask a question around post-stationary and computer services. Due to the implementation of the student-centered model, as the student will be applying directly to us, and there will be also the non-pilot institution, we're going to be spending a lot of money around scaling of the applications and scaling of the claims that come through from the universities. Hence, there's a huge increase, almost 100% versus the prior year. And then Honorable Member Bizolo has asked a question around functions. What is NSFAS doing around official functions to the rate of 3 million? These funds really are for institutional workshops, as we hold some of the institutions that come through to NSFAS, and also the travel that we make to the different institutions when we do institutional visits, and just the normal coffee and tea, and that really accounts for a very small percentage versus the travel and subsistence and also the institutional workshops.
Thank you. I think I'm just going to answer on the Msula has touched a bit on it, but someone asked in terms of what happens when we plan for a qualification. Do we then monitor the rate at which students pass? So what you do, like, obviously on the one started on the new model, for every semester, as it is now, we started processing the second semester, we do get results directly from the institutions, and then we go through them and then inform the student that you actually have not passed and you will not meet the requirements. I think not just previously and even in the new model, what we do is that we actually fund an N+2 qualification like institutions do. However, we do not pay for a repeat subject. So when a student fails, and obviously in the long term with the new model, when a student fails the subject, then they can carry through with the other ones, and then until they've exhausted their N+2. And then honorable member from the NMMU alumni, I think what has happened, if I can answer, with the transformation, obviously now, this is, we only had direct contact with the students after they were claiming. However, now that we are processing the applications ourselves, we were able to pick up mediators that some of the students had failed and therefore could not be funded. We do, however, do have an appeals process, and we've refined it in the pilot in that the institution does the initial appeal and then sends the request through to NESA so that we can have final award of a bursary or a loan. And then there was a question about do we fully fund? And the question, the answer is no. The maximum that NESA funds is 64,000. And then the other bursaries, I think we saw on the budget, we have like the Funza Lushakas, which is a full bursary. The social development is a full bursary. So even every one of our funds has specific requirements and criteria that we obviously enforce as NESA. Thank you.
So you may come in.
The response by NSFAS was by saying that they were merit in engaging in this discussion in a manner that says we are talking both university education and college education. Because in an instance where the funding is a fraction of what is required to be paid, that will be applicable particularly in the university education environment. But in the instances where it's a college bursary, and in that instance when the student qualifies and then the student is paid the total amount for which they qualify. And that challenge, I think, is necessary to just to indicate particularly also the complexity of the work which is done by complexity of the permutations of the work which is done by NSFAS.
Thank you. Would you like to add to this?
Yes, thank you very much. I think you know, one of the things that we need to acknowledge is that NSFAS is one of the flagship programs of government and has been a very important program for enabling access into higher education and into college education. Clearly there are challenges, and we are aware of the challenges. We've had meetings with NSFAS around these, and we're all working together in order to improve that. The overall funding that the DHET provides for government, for NSFAS, is in fact covered by all of the various allocations. You'll see on the list that NSFAS provided, the general allocation, the final year program, the teacher ring-fenced, students with disabilities, etc. So all of that is included. And we can also see that the FED College Bursary Fund is also separated out there. So I think just to reinforce what Dr. Mumslobo said, is that the college fund is bursaries, whereas the university fund is bursaries and loans. And these differences need to be acknowledged and understood. The other issue I think that's very important for us to think about as we engage with NSFAS and we go forward is that the issue of the shortfall is something that is going to be with us for quite a while. We are aware of the fiscal situation and we're aware that we need to manage this and manage expectations in the system. The department, together with NSFAS and Higher Education South Africa, are going to have a workshop quite soon at which we're going to be looking at this issue in a lot of detail to understand how we manage it and particularly manage the expectations going into the next registration period. So we try to avoid the kinds of pressures and problems that we had at the beginning of this year. There is a need for understanding in the system, particularly by students, that the funding is limited, but it is provided in order to create access. And we need as well to ensure we get better regulations in place to ensure transparency around how these loans and bursaries are allocated so that we can manage our expectations better. Thank you.
Thank you. GDG, I'm sure you want to top up, Chair. You may come in. But also I realize that this question has not been responded to. The one on the, where I asked on how will NSFAS
identify those students who dropped out of the system? You are coming on that line. All right, thank you very much. Please come.
Yeah, it's more than that, Chair, and the other questions. Because the other questions was, the other question was talking about any investigation on allegations of corruption in this one. Let me come up front that this institution, since 2010, the minister came up with a tenable strategy. After it was a disclaimer. Following that, there have been unqualified audit opinion. In fact, audit got by NSFAS. But out there, bad publicity, because the other question was what we do about the bad stories about NSFAS. I think they are internal with staff because we're dealing with transmission issue and we're dealing with people being placed in proper places at NSFAS, and I think the executive officer will elaborate further on that. But at this point in time, there is no investigation at the level of the board of NSFAS that has been reported and that has been launched even by our internal audit at this point in time. So, at this, for now, the allegations of any fraud at NSFAS are unfounded as we speak. The other question, Chairperson, that we found that we didn't speak to, was about the protests at the beginning of the year. What we found, and we analyzed that, what we found that the protest was all about money, more money that is needed to come to NSFAS. Hence, in our engagement with the minister, and the minister responded accordingly to some of the issues. But then the minister responded to those issues and NSFAS, still the fund is still very limited in dealing with the issues of NSFAS. And then you take over the question of the center.
As part of the monitoring mechanism that we have with the universities, because we still work with them, they are the ones that know whether the students are still in the system or not. We get regular information from the universities on the students that are still in the system. And then even in the new model, we rely on the universities to tell us whether the student is still there or not there. And once they are not there, then their allowances will then be discontinued. But on the question about, you know, if there are any investigations or fraud, what we do routinely as NSFAS, because the universities make decisions on behalf of NSFAS on which students will be funded. Therefore, we send a team of internal auditors to the universities to so that they can follow the track of the decision-making, because the decision-making gets made at the universities, who gets funded and who doesn't, in terms of the old model. Therefore, we send internal audits routinely to go to all the universities and all the, in fact, and some of the colleges, just carry out some of the internal audit work and report back to us. And part of what comes out of that process is an improvement on how the fund should be managed. There was a question that we also missed on the TRC, the TRC fund. The TRC fund is an old fund that has set up in terms of the TRC legislation. It's still with it being managed by NSFAS, and the selection is done by the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development together with the Department of Higher Education and Training. That's basically the questions that we have not answered. In terms of the rural areas, you know, there are various initiatives that NSFAS has to ensure that students in rural areas are aware. I think we still believe that it's an area of weakness, because even if you go on the indoor and go in various areas, we may still miss some students. But I think it is also fair to say, you know, some of the universities that are the biggest beneficiaries of this system are actually rural universities, the University of Venda, University of Zululand. You know, the percentage of students funded at the University of Venda is around 75% of the student population. And Zululand's similar percentages. The more rural the universities, the bigger percentage of the total student population that is actually being funded by NSFAS. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I just think we need a little bit of clarification around the issue of the fraud. We take the point that NSFAS itself, there's been no indication of fraud at NSFAS, but there has been many allegations
of fraud happening at institutional level and at the level, for example, of students fraudulently claiming that there are students and so on that are that should get funding when in fact they would not get funding. I think an indication was given that this, the new process will deal with that. But in the meantime, we are aware of this, and the Minister is very concerned about this issue. In fact, he has indicated through the department that he would like forensic investigation to be taken up in terms of understanding where that fraud is, what causes that fraud, and to try and tighten up so that we can ensure that the students who ought to be getting the money are getting the money. I don't know if the CFO wants to add to that.
Thank you, Didi. As to ensure that we get value for money, one of the things that we have done with our new internal auditors and starting up a 3-year strategic plan is to, we've asked them to do most of data analytics based on the data that they that we receive from the universities and compare that with what we have in NSFAS. That's number one. And number two, we've asked them to have a focused audit approach for the different universities or different institutions and colleges that we believe that we have challenges. And most of the some of the colleges that we had challenges on that we found out through the pilot model that we started for student-centered model. We've identified those and we've asked the internal auditors just to look at them and do a bit of forensic work. So we've also just changed the approach slightly. We've moved away from doing the normal control testing and moving on to making sure that we get valuable money. Thanks.
Well, thank you so much for your responses. I'm now going to go back to the members of the honourable members of the committee for follow-up questions. May I see how many would like to make follow-up questions? 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, in that order. You may come in, Seth.
Thank you, Jennison. I've got a number of questions. Some of my questions, I'd like to thank NSFAS for the answers and very much welcome during the presentation. Some of them were not answered, and I just want to go back to what's my first question, Honourable Chairperson. There's this question of the shortfall. Now, we all understand that there's a shortfall, and we've heard from the DDG that this is something that we have to live with and manage expectations. My question isn't necessarily, is there a shortfall? My question is, what is the shortfall? I think there's a difference. And I think us as the committee, it's important for us, Chairperson, to understand exactly what is the extent of that shortfall in order to apply our minds to that issue, because I think it's a major issue. So if we look at this budget, whether it's general allocations or whatever in the line items, if tomorrow NSFAS wanted to meet its vision and realize its vision and to redress that shortfall, what must those figures look like? And if we do not have detailed figures, what must the overall figure look like? So if NSFAS is here with a hand in hand to say it wants so much in the budget, how much is that? And I think that's important for us to understand. I'd like a detailed answer, if possible, if not, you know, in time, but an overall answer to that question. Then, in terms of the student satisfaction model, just something I think was missed in the answers. It was included in the annual performance plan that this must be measured, student satisfaction. My question is, how will that be measured? Particularly noting that we are now introducing a new system of disbursement. So student satisfaction in terms of that system and measuring that is very important at the start of any new project, particularly within the pilot project. I had a question with regards to the pilot project as well. And some of it and a lot of it was answered, particularly with regards to the appeals process. I got a question on that appeals process because there was a highly publicized incident, and I mentioned in it because the incident happened in Port Elizabeth, it was reported in the Herald last week, if I'm not mistaken, of a student that was only informed very recently of the result of an appeal. Well, I agree, Chairperson, I mean, we're sitting in
very late in the year, going into the second semester, students recess. There is some problems with that appeal process. My question is really, how long has the appeal process been, and what are the plans in the future in order to address those challenges, to expedite the turnaround time, so that you do not have students staying for 6 months or 5 months or 4 months without knowing what is their status, writing exams, writing tests, learning and studying, and then only to be disappointed very late in the year. And this has been a problem not only in the pilot project, we know outside of the pilot project as well, with the shortfall, and it comes back to shortfall most of the time. But just to get some more information on it. And then also on the other question that I had asked with regards to the challenges of distance. Now, it is centralized and Cape Town, and I do understand that a lot of it is electronic. I think the question, and if I can guide the answers, is there any possibility of offices at institutions where there are staff there? Because in part we know each institution will have their own financial aid office. And having, you know, worked those offices myself, it did solve a lot of the problems immediately. So the turnaround time is very quick. You know, whether we will have staff from national at institutions by learning, whether there will be more regionalized offices that can assist, and whether that has been budgeted for, and what are the time frames that they're looking at in order to get that, at the currently piloted project, I believe that next year we want 80% of institutions to come onto this model. Where are we in terms of that target, and will that be catered for, and then for 2016 as well? Then getting to another question around, this is perhaps more specifics, but I think it's very important, around the disbursements. I spoke about the living allowance, and I think that this is a very big problem. I've mentioned it before, and I'll keep mentioning it, because those students themselves, it's a specific group of students that are battling to keep up with their studies, so their academic performance is affected. And I know in the mandate of NASFAS, we're talking about throughput rates and academic performance and making sure that we can get up the students to the system. This is something that speaks to that. If I'm a student that is not within that geographic, in the specific proximity, I am in that proximity, and I'm not going to be staying at a residence, and I'm getting 700 or 800 rand a month in a living allowance, and I do not have a place to stay, and I do not have enough money for transport. In fact, if you have to calculate that amount for the cost of transport that has increased, it does not even cover your transport for the month. To get in for tests on a weekend, for example, or to do assignments without your one student, one laptop in the interim, and I tell a person, it affects the academics. I want to know whether or not that can be changed as a matter of urgency. What will the budgetary implications be? Has this specific group of students been analyzed? And do we know how many, how much, and how do we address that concern as a matter of urgency? I want to go into other follow-up issues, Chairperson. With regards to the final year program, it was raised in answers, and I want to follow up on that. My experience with final year program is that the student has to choose at the beginning of the year. Can they finish their studies in this year? They then sign the contract of the final year program. Now, the big problem there is we find that particularly in final year, you have your most challenging courses. A student fails a course, one course, maybe one course in that final year, means they will not be eligible to come back on NASFAS funding. Problem there is, without developing a system to address that, you have students that cannot access graduation, maybe because of one course, which means they cannot contribute to the economy, they cannot contribute to paying their debt back, whatever the case may be. Has there been some thinking around that? Because I think it's a timing problem, and it's a logistical problem more than anything else. But a student can basically be held random by one failed course in the final year because of the final year program, whereas they haven't even exhausted their 5 years or whatever the funding period has been until that case, but it's just because they chose to take their final year process at an earlier time. And then I want to go into just back to the shortfall of applicants, I'm sorry. We know, this year the minister made a statement, and I think the DC can assist us with this. The minister made a statement in terms of trying to address those protests with the extra billing rand that was taken from the National Skills Fund, if I'm not mistaken. But I haven't seen that in any of the reports. Where is that billion? How has it been done? Do we have some information as to how many students was assisted? How many students was not been able to assist? And what are the criteria that was used? Because we know that according to the department, there was a 2.6 billion rand shortfall. That's what we're told. But we also know that 50% of those that were eligible are not being able to be funded. I find a little bit disconnected, because if that is the case, then the shortfall must have been much more. But my question is then, when an extra billion was taken to assist that shortfall, what is the criteria that was used? How many students were left out? I'm trying to get consistency of application and whether or not some students have been disadvantaged, whether it is on an institutional basis, a geographic basis, a means basis, an academic deserving basis, whatever the case may be. What is the criteria around that? But my main question around this, Chairperson, to understand is that the budget hasn't increased by much, and next year we're going to have another problem. And are we always going to be reactionary to this problem? Because the expectations are not going to be managed in the short term. I can assure the nurses of that, to the health chairperson. But if the budget isn't being significantly increased and the student numbers are being significantly increased, what is the long-term plan here? Because the expectation has already been created. So how do we look, I think, chairperson, as a committee and for the department, I think it speaks to priorities, because we are in a fiscal situation where our you know, the expression of fiscal, but it speaks to government priorities as to how do we try to address the problem, and how does this department compete with competing departments and ministries for funds for the long-term future of our country, and whether or not the benefits of that is being adequately fought for. But it's something that we need to apply our minds to. I've got some other questions that I'll go through very, very quickly. Just as follow-ups, there was talk about the one student one laptop. My question was, and the chairperson, I appreciate that there was, engagement done around that and research. My question was, what was actually the costing implications? So I understand that there was costing implications and that there was an issue of it. What was the extent of it? So how much was it that was, estimated would be needed in order to fund the initiative? And then my follow-up, three follow-up questions, that is, has there been consultation with the private sector? Having been involved in a similar initiative like this previously, it's my experience that there can be initiatives with current providers where the marketing potential, this is a targeted market in students, can be harnessed in order to leverage the private sector in order to fund the initiative. So has there been engagement with the private sector around that? I have come across, in my experience, certain, Vodacom, for example, is willing to get involved. Other, if you use this as a marketing initiative, you can sell marketing space on those devices with things to software. So there are ways around it. I just want to know what has been the engagement around that and what was the actual cost to it. Going to the social development bursary, in the revised, I said that it is disbursed by NASA's, but the actual vetting of candidates and selection and so forth is done by social development. Now, my questions around that is, what is the amount? Because I don't see it, on the loans and bursary budget. If it's been disbursed by NASA, what is the actual amount there? And where does that, how is that disbursement process? So I want some reporting or accountability on that. Because, how much money, for example, was returned back because it was not, maybe there's a disconnect between the departments. And in terms of the selection of candidates, in terms of the disbursement, how much millions, hundreds of millions and so forth? I know in my year, as a subsidy president, the 50 million that actually sent back because of the problems. How much money was sent back? What is being done to try and bridge that gap? Because I know of many students that do qualify, but I know it's not necessarily a problem in terms of being connected, but it does affect the disbursement because they cannot get access to that funding, and the funding is available, and it's ring-fenced funding in that as well. So it's just my question around that social development bursary, where that accountability of how the disbursement process is taking place and how is it being held accountable, because it's across two different departments in themselves. And then just in terms of, the missing middle, it is a very, very big problem. I just want to ask, what are the time frames that we can expect? Because we do appreciate that NASA is developing a plan and it will submit it to the minister in due course. But it is a very urgent problem, and I just want to try and understand what are the time frames that we're looking at, months, years, or decades, of when are we trying to we can engage on these things, and I hope it will be very, very soon. And then just lastly, Chairperson, looking at the academic threshold. Now, this is obviously a very technical matter, and it might change now in the way that the new student centered approach is being taken. Because different institutions in the past had different ways of managing the academic threshold or whether a student meets the applications, you know, and I understood in the presentation that it's being done differently and apply every single year in terms of the new student-centered approach. Now, I'll give an example of this more technically. I know that there are general rules, whether you're doing a 3-year course or within 5 years, etc., but there are more specific rules that institutions apply. Some institutions apply to say that you must do a percentage, a proportional percentage of the credits every year. UKZN, for example, then said, you know, we're going to try and weight this proportionally in beginning years and further years to account for students that have to adapt because they come from rural schools that are not as equipped in infrastructure and teachers and textbooks, etc. What is going to be that general rule going forward? Because I would believe that some policy would have to be drawn up and regulations on how that would work. And whether or not, you know, we students have been falling off the bus, whereas they actually need to adapt, Chairperson, from a school that they're not competing on the same level as other students. But it takes them about a year to adapt, but after that year they're not pulling off the bus because they do not make those criteria. And whether or not there is an appeals process academically, because this is the first year of the pilot project, so it wouldn't really affect it as much. But the appeals process, for example, in a year you've done very badly because there was some sort of bereavement in the family or illness, etc., which was specific to that year. It had been part of the academic appeals process in the past with certain institutions. Whether that will apply the new student-centered approach, because it doesn't mean the student will do badly in all years. It just means in that particular year, there's something out of the ordinary that has affected them. Maybe they've had to sleep without any accommodation for the entire year, and there's certain evidence to that abroad. How is that going to be dealt with? Because it's no longer on an institutional basis. It's a now centralized model of students in that case. So it is a very specific matter that will affect large groups of students. Thank you, Chair.
Another follow-up by Ms. Killian.
It's a Jefferson Arnold Way.
Cover. Thank you. No progressive. And then Ms. Ntulu.
Thank you, Chair. My question was also not answered, but the Honourable Member has also touched on it.
Okay.
It was with regards to the capacity at the head office to handle applications of administrative.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Madam Ngalimi.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. And I just want to welcome the response that was made by the Chairperson of the staff and the team. And further say, let this marriage last longer and grow for the better of our students. My follow-up question is that I have heard the Chairperson when he was responding that they are going to access the information of the student from Home Affairs. I just want to check whether the data of the vulnerable learners are they also going to find that information there? Because we have the cases where you find the student is having all the two parents are alive, but they are poor and vulnerable. How are they going to go about that? Thank you.
Okay, from my side then, I would like to contextualize my question on the appointment of the CEO. This flows from the Auditor General's report. So it's not from some hacking, and my understanding was that maybe the CEO or CFO. I meant to say CFO. So you see, it's not from Sam Sahin, it's from our engagement with the Auditor General, but also I think the understanding was that maybe this was supposed to be done concurrently with the accounting authority. If you say the board had approved, but there's still an audit query on that approval, it creates an impression that maybe it was supposed to be, the approval was supposed to be done concurrently with the accounting authority. But it's fine. I think I will further engage on this one. Not that you also are, you're not agreeing to this, but the promises come from
our engagement with the Auditor General. All right. I'm sure you can now proceed with the disbursement of funds timely. I'm sure if you can repeat that one. It wasn't clear. Your response was not clear to me because from our reading, it became clear that some students are being disadvantaged by granting approvals from as late as the second semester. So, yeah, if you can bring clarity today, it could be that, you know, sometimes mistakes do happen, but then that's why you are here, so that you can benefit in terms of getting this information from the hospital. Thank you. Over to you, Chair.
Thank you very much once more, Chairperson. Honorable Kasim, I can assure you now that when I answer your question, what is the shortfall, it is very clear. And I think the acting TDG will help us in that particular way. I'm not going to even attempt it in terms of what you want in that particular question. But I can quickly tackle your time frame issue on the missing middle. Because it's something that we are already handling. I can assure you, it won't take more than a year from now. It won't take more than a year from now. Because we'll deliver it on time.
Are you turning to the plan?
Because
remember earlier on in your response, you said you are developing a plan.
Yeah, we are developing. I'm talking about the plan submitted to the minister, etc. And we're not going to exceed a year from now.
I'm trying to check on what will cause this delay because I know we don't have a lot of time. Remember, we are on the fifth parliament and I'm telling you, expectations are even more. We are under pressure, so it will be good that we have the same understanding and move from the same wavelength. About 6 months? 6 months?
I don't have a problem. We can comply with that urgency.
Yeah.
I can always put myself on the safe side, Chairperson. But if you ask for 6 months, I can easily comply with you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Let's get to my questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would first tackle with the question on student satisfaction and how it's going to be measured. As we are running the pilot, we've already started with our foreign students. We previously, before we started this project, we had a 12-seat conduct set. We've moved it now to 35 seats to be able to conduct the students. But we also want to run formal surveys going forward in terms of student satisfaction as an organization. But we've already started with the conduct center to call students. And because we wanted to find the student experience in terms of the new, because we're taking them through a new model as a small group of students. We wanted to understand what is the experience of the students and how we can improve it going forward. The appeals process is a process that is always existed in the reference unit institutions, managed in various different forms. And we have tried for the first time with the pilot to try and bring some standardization on the appeal. And one of the things when we engage with the academics at the various universities that we agreed on and was very clear on that NEFAS is not an academic institution. Therefore, NEFAS is not going to deal with anything that's related to academics. NEFAS is a provider of financial aid. And therefore, that line would draw it very tightly with the academics. Like you, NEFAS, you would only deal with something that has got to do with financial aid, not anything that has got to do with the academics. Therefore, it is the university that will decide that a student is worth to be kept in the system because they've got potential to succeed academically. And therefore, let's not rely on what the investors say. And therefore, we'll pick it up from there. If any appeal is about academic progress or lack of, that appeal will be dealt with by the university and then posted to NEFA to deal with it from a funding perspective. But that's the specific issue in terms of the timing. I think it's something that we need to investigate as to what happened in that specific issue in terms of the communication to the students. Part of what we found that in terms of the first year of this is we look at the mindset of the students and the universities provide us with academic information. Then we rank the students, say these students will be funded. And therefore, after that, the universities tell us, no, these students are registered.
then there's a group of students that don't get registered for whatever reason. They might have gone to another university or decided that they are not going to study this year. And therefore, as the process goes, the money that gets available over the course of the period, because the gap that appears, so some of them did not register, some of them got other bursaries, and even after they have registered, they got other bursaries, then students would continue to be provided with money. But also, unfortunately, because we are always in a fundraising mood, every time there's a funder that walks into the door and say about 10 million rand, we don't say it's made. We say, when are you going to deposit to the bank account? And once that deposited, then try and communicate with the student and say there's 10 million rand available that could be used. And it might be made, but that's just part of how the process gets managed throughout the year. The issue of allowances and where allowances should be spent, I think that's one of the challenges that we've encountered. We're working with the universities. We don't want to present ourselves as experts in terms of where the allowances should be and what are the student-specific issues. And we continue to believe that the existence of university financial aid offices is important because they are the linkage between NSFAS and the students, where the students are on campus. And part of what I mentioned, in as much as the data, the rules are centralized, the applications are centralized, but we still believe that it's important that the colleges and the universities, they maintain an office that deals with financial aid, that becomes a linkage between the central system and the students that exist that are on campus. And therefore, as an institution, we're therefore maintaining maintain that thing with the universities. Currently, the discussions within NSFAS involving the department as to whether we need to expand the tentacles of NSFAS and have regional offices. But if you are going to have five regional offices throughout the country, they will still be 800 kilometers away from some students. You know, it's not going to have in terms of distance. And you know, there must be a better model than that. We still believe that the better model is to still have maybe the financial aid offices at the universities as a linkage with the student, and them understanding, you know, what's happening and having some access to the network information so that they can be able to advise students that this is where this is how the situation is at this point. The final program, the rules of the final program, it doesn't just exclude the student who has been through a final program. But one of the rules is you find it through the final program once. You can revert back to NFS General, provided you are still within what we refer to as the M plus 2 rule. The M plus 2 rule therefore says you can stay in university for 4 years instead of for a degree plus 2 additional years for you to finish all the courses. Therefore, the final year is not an automatic exclusion just because you have gone through the final year. You may still revert back to the NSFAS general funding if you still meet the criteria of continued funding. The 1 billion rand that came from the NSF, the 1 billion rand that came from the NSF was provided for a top-up on the shortfall of the universities. We unfortunately don't have the details now in terms of the number of students and all those things that they funded. And you see that in terms of funding, from 2012 to 2013, funding increased from 7.7 billion to about 8.8 billion. And part of the responsibility of fiscal management is this thing, because you are funding a student. If you fund a student this year, that student will be there next year. You know, you need to almost keep a form of reserve and make sure that student is carrying them through, otherwise it's creating a problem in the system. And part of it is about reserve money. And there is also an issue about disbursement and late disbursement. I think as a question, we should state it clear that one of the things that we're trying to tell the business was to make sure that we disperse and pay money early. Part of the challenge that we have had and we had to deal with it because there's a misalignment between the academic and the financial year. The academic year starts in January, but the financial year starts in April. Which means when the academic year starts in January to March, there's very little money in the system because the budget gets dispersed in April. But we're now managing that through the recovery account and try and use the recovery account for that period so that we can disperse money early enough to the students. But the reality in terms of fiscal money is we have no money for that fiscal year. Well, money starts flowing from April when the new financial year starts. But we're now managing that process through using the recovery pool of money to be able to intervene in that period and make sure that students are not left stranded for the first 2 months of the year. But also at the end of the financial year, which is now in the new academic year, because the financial year runs until March, but the academic year has already ended in December, and students need to register for another academic year. What we're now doing is we've gone to the Department of Higher Education and said, please give the money early so that you can be able to pay everyone by later end of the term. And that has happened this year. We don't have any excuse because we've now given money early so that we can be able to give money to the students and the students can be able to be assisted. The chairperson has dealt with the missing media, I've dealt with the academic appeals. One student, one laptop. Also, we don't have the detailed numbers, of course, because we put together a whole lot of possibilities in terms of the one student, one laptop. In terms of, if, for instance, we would say, if we would target computer science students, if we target students of this category, and we put a whole lot of possibilities. But the reality is, there was not enough money flowing into the system that has confined this thing. And it's not a project that has been dropped. It's a project that is being investigated as to how we can do it. Because part of the input from some of the academics was we think that there may be an opportunity to bundle together books and devices so that students can have e-books. But some academics were very dismissive of that idea. They said, no, it's a non-data. Students must just get books, not e-books, because academically that's not on our level. We're still working within the system that says, because it's not going to find a solution that works for the sector. I think I've dealt with all the questions.
The long-term questions.
In terms of risk management, from the 12th person, there is a board subcommittee, that is the audit and risk committee of the board, that is what accountability and governance for it. It has then approved the risk management policy, and the CFO has been designated as the chief risk officer of the institution to embed the practice of risk management. This is becoming something that NSFAS is concentrating on to ensure that we improve our process of risk management. But as part of the transition, we run in two different models and they provide different levels of risk. But the old model that relies on the universities, a part of our risk is the decision making gets made in 75 different places across the country. And you might find that there are variations in terms of how the decisions get made by different institutions. But in the new model, there's a new set of risks that come on board that we're now addressing directly to students. We need to make sure that there's sufficient monitoring mechanism on the usage of the funding by the students. And apparently in the old model, no one knew where students are using money because, you know, some institutions would just give them hard cash, 15,000, and say, here you go, here you go, money. Some institutions would give them cash. And you know, there was various ways on how institutions were dealing with it. And therefore, this risk management becomes something that as NSFAS we're concentrating on going forward.
Okay,
the question around the shortfall, the chair of board asked me if I could maybe respond to that. There are two issues. First one was the initial shortfall of the 2 something billion that we recognized last year. And that was related to reports coming from institutions in terms of students who had not been covered by loans. And when we did the investigation, it came up to that amount if we were taking into account what we would have to cover the students for the full time that they would be in studies. It was clear that that wasn't going to be possible to cover all students, and so what happened was that additional funding was found just to cover continuing students. It was only continuing students that were covered. But that was an exercise that was done in terms of students who were in the system. There were two other reports. In 2010, there was a ministerial review of NSFAS, which identified a shortfall in the system and estimated that NSFAS probably needed to have more than three times the amount of funding available. There was a second report that was done in last year, in 2013, on a ministerial working group on fee-free education. And what that report did was it tried to understand what students would potentially come into universities in the various categories of very poor to relatively poor. So it was looking then at the whole group of students who would meet the requirements to come into universities linked to the enrollment projections in universities and saying, what would NISPAS require in order to fund all of them? And that was moving the threshold to about 300,000 family contributions. And that exercise showed that NISPAS would require something in the order of 30, just over 30 billion in order to fund over the period all students over all years of study in their first degree or diploma. So you can see that, in fact, a huge additional amount would be required in order to meet that vision. The department obviously did put together an in-test bid, which was not favorably looked at by Treasury because it was such a huge amount, and it wasn't possible to provide that at that stage. But I do think it is something that we have to work on together in terms of understanding how this can progressively be brought into place. Obviously, the relatively poor, not the extremely poor, may have to be dealt with differently through various kinds of processes, and that's the plan I think we're talking about in terms of the same model. Thank you.
Sure. I'd like the department CFO to come in.
Thank you, Chief. Perhaps just a treasury perspective, some of the arguments from treasury side that they raised at the time when we requested additional funding. And I think there are basically three critical issues, if I remember them correctly. The one is the last point of Dr. Parker, exactly how can we progressively start to do this? What kind of rollout process can we have by not doing everything at one stage? And that rollout can be in different ways. It can be based on family income ratios, it can perhaps be based on specific fields of study depending on the scarce and critical skills issue, so there can be different scenarios there. The other issues are linked to effectiveness and efficiencies, the principle of value for money, which is one of the key principles currently in the ETF processes, looking at, for example, the pathway of NISPAS students. Do we continue to fund students that keeps on failing? So those are some of the critical issues. And then the other issue is the recovery rate by NISPAS itself. Taking into account since 1991, how many billions were already allocated to students, what did NISPAS actually get back in return of that, and the country as a whole, basically. So those are some of the counter arguments, and we I think, don't have all the answers at the moment. Maybe this was, we do have some, but those are some of the things that we need to look at as well.
I take it that this then it helps us to close the discussion. And honorable members, I can see you are so happy and you are satisfied. I can see you've exhausted all the questions. Now, that must be sending a word to you, much as you sent your report this morning. So this is the response you still get from the honorable members. And I'll appreciate it in the future, at least if you can send us your report a day before, because our practice here is we've got to sleep over the work. So we only got it this morning, but this is the response that you're getting. Can you see what I was talking about when I said to you, I've got incapacitated, and I really want to be ready for you, and you must be ready for us, because we also want to be ready for you. Actually, I think it will help. We need to come to this meeting well prepared, both yourself and ourselves. So that will assist us if you send us or you circulate your documents on time, so that we also prepare ourselves. But thank you so much. And from where I'm sitting, and if there's any objection from the members, they will say so. As this committee, we accept your ADP. Am I representing the honourable member correctly? Agreed. Thank you very much. But I also want to thank all of you for the robust, objective, constructive, and fruitful deliberations we've had. And there's nothing personal here. I'm sure you saw that. And this will be the honor of our meetings.
We just focus on the real issues, your strategic objectives, and your APP, and the success in the implementation of the APP. But as I've said in my opening remarks, that we expect you to give us your 100% achievement of your targets. And then I would also like to commend NESFAS, Chair, and your board for the newly appointed Senior Manager for Debt Management, Internal Audit Function. But also I would like to commend you on the improvement in the supply chain management processes. Now, the buzzword will be keep up the good work now. So, but what you did not tell us is about your audit opinion, because to us that will be another area of engagement, but maybe for the next meeting. All right? And of course, we have identified challenges that need to be addressed by your good self. We're not going to leave you off the hook on the investigation on the identified corruption, or even if it's a perception. Okay? To me, it needs to be dealt with so that it does not impact negatively on your work. So we're not going to leave. Please investigate, and we'll be interested in the report, because indeed we've heard from your own self that there are some individuals who have found wanting as far as working with these with the finances, students and the financial aid officers. So they must investigate so to clean the system. Remember, we want you to be this credible body that is providing this credible fund to change the socio-economic situation of the country. All right? But thank you very much. And then also we would like to remind you of the submission of the Miss Middle plan within 6 months, and also the improvement on the disbursement of the funds to students. Remember, you need to make sure that things happen, not to hold things up. CFO. They must get this thing done, and then that talks to your it's your proper planning. So as the school opens, that money must be disbursed. Hey, you don't have to wait, because that's your core business. So as the school opens, why not they wait for 3 months before they get the money? Hey, so I think it's about quality output and outcome. Quality outcome. All right, but thank you so much, and indeed we will afford the our guest 5 minutes break, and then 5 minutes is too much, Prof. You can say, so I can give you 1 minute break so that you come back and then. I do like to consult. Can I remember we're a team now? We're a collective. What would suit you best? 5 minutes break, because yeah, no, this is robust. But thank you so much. And if they want to leave, can they leave? Chair, if indeed you have more time, you can stay with us. But if you've got other things to attend to, we will excuse you. You and your team. All right. Thank you so much. Shall we have a 5 minute break? I'm sure, honorable members, this time I'm sure the chief for everyone here.